essentially, the motivation of this work at the beginning was to find an operational axiomatization for quantum mechanics. It was stimulated a lot by the work of Lucien Hardy that everybody knows. And then I got a direction more and more. I would like to say practical, in the sense not speculative, in the sense that I want to recognize that, if there is. I want to really classify connection between operational statements and mathematical structure. Maybe a way that I really would like to say things in a category theoretical way. I would love to have a kind of operational category and mathematical categories and factor between the two. This would be the dream. So to have a kind of level in which I can understand, for example, what is the relation between an issue like no signaling, dynamical independence, local observability, without the need of making the tool all the time to quantum mechanics, but just to have a direct connection between these issues. So this is the goal. But the original motivation is also the fact that I always regarded quantum mechanics in a very positive way. So I think quantum mechanics is not a limitation to our possibility of exploring reality. Actually, it's an help. So it's in some sense an opposite point of view from that of Speken. But so maybe we have a limitation to what we can know, because if we can do it, then it would become very complicated experimentally, for example. So at the end, what I will say is that quantum mechanics is a way to reduce enormously the experimental complexity. So quantum mechanics is a reduction of experimental complexity. It's the same way in which it's a reduction of computational complexity. It's experimental accessibility. You will see that the main postulate essentially regards calibration of measuring apparatus. In some sense, this work is in the same line of the work of Ludwig, but there is something which comes from quantum information and from recent experience from quantum tomography, which was not available at that time in those years. So I should say that I never published anything, but I had the opportunity of presenting this work to many conferences, and I got a feedback, serious feedback from many people, and I want to mention especially Masanao Ozawa in Sendai, Rainer Werner. And also I should mention some of my young co-workers, especially Giulio Chiribella, Paolo Perinotti, and Massimiliano Sacchi. They always remain quite at a safe distance from this kind of foundational research. You know, it's pretty dangerous for young students or postdoc in Italy to be classified as foundational. So anyway, but they are very interested, and when, you know, the best is to discuss this thing with them. And I got a lot of very useful feedback. So, the operational context is, if you want, the motivation for the experiment in an experimental science. Don't take this as too much seriously, but it's in some ways the definition of the words that are in boldface there. So it's a an is the operational talk which I want to give the postulates. So the starting point is that experiments, we can say, are performed to get information on the state of an object physical system, in the sense that we say that the states contain all information to make prediction. So we make experiments to predict experiments, so we make experiments to acknowledge to the state. And since necessarily we work with partial prior knowledge, so we start from an epistemic limitation about the system, and this force us in a probabilistic setting. Right? So we start with an epistemic probability. This is necessary in experimental science. Right? And so the real starting point of all these things is the following, and this is very different from the previous work by, for example, by Ludwig or by other authors. So what is really a different, I think, is that the starting point is the emphasis on transformations instead of observables, on the emphasis on experiment instead of measuring something, or measuring properties. So the experiment is what? Okay, everybody agrees, we have an apparatus which is which interacts with your the system that you is under consideration, and then the apparatus will produce a set of possible transformations. Every experiment can be regarded in this way. And each transformation will occur with some probability, by definition. Otherwise, if it's deterministic, there is no need of experiment, right? It will be just free evolution. And, sorry. In this context, I start with these postulates, where these words that are emphasized in green will be defined during the talk. The first one, I think, is evident that exist independent systems. The second is the crucial postulate that there exist for composite systems made of two systems, two identical systems. Actually, this can be properly generalized, but let's take as such now. Two identical systems. There exists a state which, as I say, is symmetric. A joint state of the two systems which is symmetric and dynamically and preparationally faithful. The third postulate, I will show later that probably this postulate can be proved by the second one, so I can probably eliminate this postulate, but it's such a nice, important, relevant postulate. By the way, as you will see, this talk is related a lot to the talk by Matt and by John of the first morning, and they also have this. So the local observability principle that I can always perform a local informationally complete measurement, a global informationally complete measurement by performing just local informationally complete measurement. This is a crucial postulate because without this, the experimental complexity will grow exponentially. And the last one, which I really don't like, and I think I probably am able to eliminate, is that I can always achieve an informationally complete observable by performing a joint discriminating observable over system plus some other independent system, which I cannot see. Anyway, we have to see more precisely the meaning of each of these words. So we will see that from all these postulates, I can derive the Hilbert space structure. I'm working in finite dimension. Everything is defined in finite dimension. There are some technical problems that I've not solved yet for infinite dimension. Maybe somebody will be able to help me. But we will see that by just using postulate 1 and 2, I can derive the system the sister algebra, structure of quantum mechanics or classical mechanics, this is the sister algebra of transformations. I can derive a sister algebra for transformations. And then I have a conjecture to eliminate all these two postulates. I will give a finger. So there is some work in progress. So let me say that, by definition, the experiment is a set of possible transformations. I will denote a transformation by these calligraphic letters. J, which labels which transformation occurred, is the outcome of the experiment. And I will use this double stick font to denote the full experiment. I will use the name action as a synonym also of experiment, because this is the choice of the experimenter, in the sense that it cannot decide which transformation will occur, but it can decide which experiment to perform. So it can decide the set of the, so the set of transformation is the action. Now, battery is down. By definition, what is a state? So, if I know the state, I can predict all forthcoming experiments. Means that the state is a probability rule from transformations to 0, 1. And it must be normalized. So the probability of all possible transformation over all possible over an experiment must be 1. This must be true for all possible experiments. And let me just take that this simple rule, which corresponds to the fact that I'm saying that the free evolution is the identity. So this is a choice of the reference system in which I am performing the experiment, right? So it's like Dirac picture. Now, everybody agrees that states, by definition, I make a convex set because I just make a convex combination of the probability rules, and that the transformations make a monoid, because I can always compose transformation and get transformation that is the identity transformation. So this is the very minimal thing. But I will denote transformation by this German font, T, and state by this the big S. Now, definition of independent system. This is a very delicate point, because I want a definition of independence, which is purely dynamical. So it must have nothing to do with the state. So the only way that you have to define independence is through commutativity of transformation. So independent system is synonymous of the possibility of performing local experiments. And by definition, local experiments have all transformations that commute. So if you perform an experiment here and then here, you get the same result if you reverse the order of the two. I don't want to say that two systems are independent if there exist states, for example, that are factorized. This would be a definition which is statistical. I want a definition which is purely dynamical. If you find another definition, I would be happy to discuss it, because I couldn't find any other definition. This definition does not imply the tensor product. This definition in quantum mechanics says that independent systems are, for example, also the direct sum, which is not what we usually think about dynamical independence. So it's a very weak definition of dynamical independence. But as we will see, the tensor product structure will come not just from this dynamical independence, but also from the local observability principle. So this will be the crucial ingredient to get the potential problem. Yes.
Are you asking for the existence of a family of immigrant transformations, or just the existence of one?
Each transformation of any experiment on A will commute to, with each transformation of any experiment on B. So the commutation is for every couple of specific, particular transformations for any couple of experiments.
But you're referring to the two systems in that definition.
This is dynamical independence. So, for example, if you have an algebraic framework, it will contain both classical and quantum together in a non-trivial way. I'm saying in the algebraic way. But that's the only way that I get to define dynamical independence without involving the state at all. If you have another way, I would be really happy of considering it. Dynamical must be related only to transformations, right?
But just since you sounded like you were answering the challenge, I mean, you can at least conceive of a theory where there are separate systems and operations don't commute in this sense.
Mm-hmm.
But where a non-signaling principle is satisfied.
I believe so.
And maybe even your other principle, the local, or what do you call it,
the local observability.
Yeah, you can have that satisfied too. It sounds like in that theory you could talk about separate systems.
Uh-huh.
For example, each system can have its own reduced state. It's just that the correlations that you get when you set the measurements depend on which order the measurements came in.
The correlation would depend on the order?
Yeah, I'm just saying one could conceive a theory like this. So the probabilities for outcomes of some operation on measuring on system A don't depend on what you do on system B. But if you look at the correlations between measurements on A and B, those correlations depend on which order.
This is related to the paper that you wrote, this paper with Barthol?
No, this isn't in any paper.
Oh.
Because
I can prove that from this you get no signaling,
yes.
but vice versa, it's not an if and only if condition, I agree. So this no signaling can come from something.
Yes,
else.
My point is that this is logically stronger than no signaling. One can conceive of a model where no signaling is satisfied, but not this.
Yeah,
one
that's very interesting.
About separate systems.
I'm very interested to this. I'm very interested to that. We can go on to more details because I have to understand exactly. Anyway, so since there is this commutation, the order is not important, and I will put the transformation in a list, saying this is transformation of system 1, transformation of system 2, transformation of system 3, and I will use the usual nowadays work multipartite, bipartite, to say system composed of two or three independent systems. So, but remember, it's in this sense. Now we have the notion of local state that comes immediately from this notion of dynamical independence. So what is the local state of the nth system? Is just the joint state of all systems on which I perform just the identical transformation, the free evolution, apart from the N system on which I perform transformation A. So this is the equivalent of the partial phrase in quantum mechanics. This is the local state. So as you can see, it comes from, I can define this with this dynamical independence. You can use the same concept in your case. Because it's a crucial thing to have these local. Anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, I think so.
And then we have the notion of conditional state, which comes from the Bayes rule. So the base rule is a probability rule. The probability rule gives a state. The state is the probability rule, which I will denote by this sub-letter. Say this is the state conditioned by the knowledge that the transformation A occurred, which will give the probability that transformation B occurs, knowing the transformation A occurred. And actually, it was noticed by Ozawa that there is a hidden assumption here in this definition, because I am assuming that the normalization of this state for all possible transformations of an expert, which he says is equivalent, and I think he's right, but I'm still wondering about this problem. He says this is equivalent to a kind of no signaling from the future, because you want that this sum over all possible transformation of an experiment is independent on the experiment and obviously independent on the transformation A. So this means that there is no no signaling from something which comes after A. If we don't have this, this is actually an assumption. It was an even assumption. I never noticed that. But what should I say? It's true. What is your opinion about that? He says that it's an assumption. So
are you defining a condition? Are you defining these conditional probabilities?
To define. So when I say I define conditional probability, but I need that the probability rule is normalized over every possible experiment, and this normalization is an assumption, which he says is no signaling from the future. Anyway. I leave this for possible.
This is
only in order to define the conditional state. The conditional state.
Can we go back to slides?
Right. What is it? This one.
So, what would be the problem then?
The problem is that even though omega is normalized for. So there is no B here. It's just A, sum over all possible transformation A in an experiment. There is no guarantee that omega A will be normalized for all possible transformation in B.
Very high.
I don't know.
I ran across a similar problem. and it's especially serious if you're looking at quantum gravity where you don't have fixed causal structures from the future and the past and not clear concepts. And so for that reason, I have to work with joint probabilities rather than conditional probabilities. But it's interesting that you can come across the same.
Right. Right. Indeed, it is much better to work with joint probability. I agree with you.
Let me also comment on that. This condition that Ozawa says that it's a pre-assumption somehow is very natural, because if you say conditional probability, you should somehow specify what you mean, that usually conditional probability is also a problem, which has the sigma in perfect.
Yeah, but in this case, you have the possibility of choosing different experiments.
Yeah.
And the conditioning is for a single transformation. Mm. So the situation is a little bit more, it's not just conditioning, it's something more, because you have normalization over possible transformation of an experiment. There's something more. It's not just conditional.
I mean, still, you use a family and also conditional probability.
But there is the choice of experiments.
That's true. But still, you ignore the points that you have as a framework. There are at least two different ways to extend or generalize the classical concept of conditional probability. There are different solutions. So somehow, you should perhaps specify the actual
structure. This is purely abstract operational definition. It has nothing to do with the underlying structure. It's general. It must be the same for every theory. It's very general. So, okay.
In that previous slide that was just up, could you perhaps explain why that you need that assumption? Why isn't that always true?
Because if when I say that this is a state, I imply that it's normalized for all possible transformation B in an experiment. I need to go on. There are other interesting issues. Anyway, so it is convenient to use the concept of not normalized state and to maybe normalize in this way and consider the complex cone of weights. Let me call this weights. And then it's convenient to introduce the notion of operation over a state, which is given by just the conditional state, which is not normalized. This is the same kind of notion that you have in quantum mechanics. This is the quantum operation. So let me say more shortly, the quantum operation is just the action of the state, of the transformation over the state, which is just the joint probability rule. So you have immediately a way of defining a linear, you can see it's linear action, we have to define linearity now in a moment, linear action of the transformation over states. So we have seen that this notion of experiment gives the starting point, the definition of experiment gives this notion of state as probability rule over transformation, the base rule, with this conditioning and this no signaling from the future, maybe, gives the evolution as conditioning as a linear one. So, and this is what you have in quantum mechanics, clearly. So there is nothing more than this definition of experiment here. Only that. Now, clearly, from the definition of conditional state, we have that there are different transformations which always produce the same state change, but can occur with different probabilities. And there are transformations which always occur with the same probability, but generally affect a different state change. So we have equivalence classes. I will call dynamically equivalent two transformations that will give the same conditional states for all possible starting states. And I will say that two transformations are informationally equivalent in the sense that they will give the same information over the state if they occur with the same probability for every state. Now, a relevant point is that a transformation is completely specified operationally, not practically, not in the sense of the way in which I build it, if I specify both equivalence classes. Now, I will say that two transformations, A and B, are informationally compatible if they can occur in the same experiment, namely, if the sum of their probability for every possible state is lower than one. So they can actually, in principle, occur in the same experiment. For such couple of transformations, I can define the addition of transformations, which is just coarse graining of the experiment, so corresponds to a transformation which is either A1 or A2, I don't know which one, and which is defined by the informational equivalence, which is just that the probability is the sum of the probabilities, and by the dynamical equivalence, which is just the weighted sum of the conditional state, which, if you look in terms of joint probability, is just the linearity of the transformation over the state. So this conditioning is just this rule. And you can easily check that this addition of transformation is distributed with respect to the composition of transformation. So these are the same things that you have in quantum mechanics. I can define the multiplication by a scalar of the transformation. Oh, doesn't work anymore. Oh. What is
the hockey stick?
The hockey.
All this.
I don't see
it here.
Ah.
There's also another electronic pointer. This.
Ah, maybe it will affect.
The yellow button.
The yellow button. Okay. Good. So I define multiplication by a scalar, by a positive scalar between 0 and 1, the transformation, which is dynamically equivalent to A, but it just occurs with probability rescaled by lambda. Now you can see that in this way I can introduce a convex structure over transformations that now are a convex monad. These are the physical transformations. So physical transformations are a convex monad. I call effect the equivalence, the informational equivalence class of transformation. This is the effect in the sense of Ludwig. But as you can see, it's just an operational concept. It is the same as that of John and Matt. What is Matt? Ah, and then you can see from the definition of conditional state that the action of transformation over effect, the operation of the transformation over the effect, goes in the reverse way, is this one. So the transformation over the effect corresponds to this effect. And the transformation is completely specified once you know the action over all possible effects. And clearly now, by duality, effects are linear functional over states, and in this way you are moving the convex structure from states to effects, right, by duality. Okay. Now, here we have demo signaling. Clearly, in general, you know that the occurrence of the transformation B on system 1 generally affects the local state on system 2. So, in this notation, this is the joint state conditioned by the local transformation B on system 1, local state on system 2, is different from the unconditional state local on system 2. However, a full local action on system 2 does not affect the local state on system 1. This is the signal. So if you define the transformation, which is the sum over the sum in the sense that I just defined before, over all possible transformations in an experiment, let me use the same notation for the transformation and for the experiment. The statement of the no signaling theorem is that for every joint, bipartite, this means bipartite state, and for every experiment, the state conditioned by transformation A, local on system, local transformation, local full action on system 1, local state on system 2, is the local state on system 2 unconditional, without any condition. And the proof, I don't know, it's very simple. You want to see the proof? Just to have a flavor of the way in which these proofs go. So first of all, you have to say that since A1 and A2, A2 and A1, they commute, because the system are dynamically independent, then the joint state is a bilinear form over effects, because they are the equivalence class for probability, A1 and A2. And by definition, for every transformation B, this is the definition of the local state on system 2. You have identity on the first system and B on the second system. So using the addition rule and the transformation corresponding to the sum of all possible transformations in an experiment, You have the state, the probability of the full sum of transformation of the of repeating. So the action, let me say, the probability of the action and the transformation B, which is just given by the probability of the effect corresponding to the full experiment, which is just the identity effect, just the identity effect, right? And effect B, this is by definition, because this is in the equivalence class of the identity transformation, is the local state on system 2. And then, on the other end, you have the conditional state, conditioned from the action of system 1. It's pretty hard to follow if you are not familiar with these kind of things, but the reasoning is very straightforward and simple. Conditional state, conditioned by action on 1 and local state on 2, is given by the composition of transformation B on system 2 and action A on system 1, which is this, which is the same as this. And so this one is equal to this, which is the statement. Here, I'm using the notion of conditioning, but there is no need of assuming no effects from the future because the two transformations commute. So it's not relevant which one occurs first. So, very odd. So we have seen that this notion of experiment implies this notion of state and the notion of independent system. This notion of a local state, the Bayes rule, the conditional state, and all this is what you need to imply no signal. This is just a sufficient condition for no signal. It's not necessary. I would love to know a sufficient and necessary condition. Okay, so now you can take differences and define the affine linear spaces by taking differences of weights, taking differences of effects, and so now you have the linear space of generalized, let me say generalized, when I take different weights, generalized transformation, generalized effects, the generalized transformation make a real algebra, so up to now we are at the level of a real algebra. I can introduce norm for effect by taking the supremum over all possible states of the probability of the effect, and generalized to generalized effect by taking the modulus. So now that I have defined the norm over the effect, I can define the unit ball of effects and define the norm for weights as the supremum over the unit ball of effects. This is the standard way of building up norms. And I can define norms over generalized transformation as the supreme over the unit ball of the norm of the transformation acting on the effects. It's very standard. So in this way, effects, generalized effects, and generalized weights make a dual Banach pair. And the pairing is, between commas, the Bohm rule. This is the probability rule. So as you have seen, and by the way, the transformation, the generalized transformation, are a Banach algebra. So,
understand that the difference of effect and transformation.
Okay, so what is the question?
I cannot understand the difference between effects and the transformation.
The effects are equivalence classes of transformation.
Okay.
They occur with the same probability, but can give generally different conditions.
Only we concern the probability.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. So, as you have seen, the dual Banach pair of states and effects is just a consequence of the probabilistic framework for transformations. And the notion of effects comes from this informational equivalence. So it's just that you take differences, not just sum. So this dual Banach pair has nothing to do with quantum mechanics, has nothing to do with classical mechanics. I think it's just the general probabilistic framework. There's nothing more than that. Now, I define an observable as a complete set of effects. And I define an informationally complete observable as an observable which is sufficient to span every effect. So it's a basis for effect. And clearly, by duality, the dimension of the convex set of states is just the minimum cardinality of informationally complete measurement, apart from normalization, which gives minus one here. And this is what you need to make the so-called block representation. The block representation is just an expansion of a informationally complete effects, and the conditioning will be just an affine fractional affine transformation. So there is nothing quantum in the block representation. And by the way, it is possible to prove that if you start from if you build up the set of possible effects from what you have in the lab, you can always find a minimal informationally complete. It's a little bit tricky to prove it, but is there do you want to see the proof?
No, please. You just speed is very rapid. You are talking speed, increasing now. Please, back.
You want me to go slowly?
But please, back is right.
You want to see the previous slide? Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Okay, I was just saying that.
Previous.
The previous? Okay. Which one? This one?
Yes,
this one. Right?
In this case, you consider sigma is
set. Sigma is the convex set of states.
This
is the dimension.
Dimension,
and this is the cardinality of the minimal informationally complete. So it's the dimension of the effects. And there is only a minus one to put because this is a convex set, it's not the affine generalized weights linear space. So there is a minus one because of normalization. That's all.
What is the definition of the dimension?
The definition of the dimension of a convex set
is
the dimension of the minimal embedding linear space. Definition of a three-dimensional convex set.
Minimum of
the, you are embedding the convex set in
a minimum number of extremal points.
No, the dimension of a convex set is just the affine dimension. Affine dimension. The dimension of the linear space in which I embed the convex set, the minimal dimension. So
minimum.
You can always imagine a convex set embedded in Rn, right?
Okay. Sorry, I can't understand it. Minimum dimension is the number of independent elements. What? I cannot understand. Maybe there is two way of defining dimension in affine in space.
Right. Yeah. It's a linear space, right? So the effects are a linear space. The generalized effects are a linear space. This is the dimension.
Do you realize it?
And the generalized weights are a linear space. So this is the dimension of the. I just take difference instead of only making convex combination, I also make differences.
Making convex combination is a different concept.
What is a different concept?
So I think there is two ways concerning the image on the affine space, convex space. For example, please consider usual set of density matrix. In this case, first dimension is the dimension of Hilbert space. In this case, the number, minimum number of extremal points for each. Another one is the linear space of observer.
This is the usual the geometrical dimension of a convex set. There is nothing.
In my case, there is two definitions.
I understand, but this is. I'm just saying. This is just the usual. The usual.
In my case,
you are talking about category theorem, Catalogoni theorem, or something like that. It has nothing to do. This is just the usual geometrical dimension.
I mentioned two ways of definition. Which is your definition?
So you embed your convex set in linear space, and you take the minimal dimension of the linear space in which the convex set is embedded.
I think we could agree on that.
So you are talking about there are many possible definitions of dimensions. I agree.
Can we leave this question until the end?
Now, the local observability principle, as I said, is a crucial principle and says that if I want to perform an informationally complete measurement, experiment over, for example, three independent systems, I don't need to build up a new machine for a tripartite system, but I can just use machines for a single system. So I can just use three identical machines, each one performing an informationally complete measurement. This principle, I think, is crucial because it reconciles the holism with the reductionism, in the sense that if you see all this Ayurveda literature in the shelves of Barnes and Noble bookstores, this guy learned from scientists that nature is holistic because there is an entanglement, and on the other side, the scientists are so stupid, they are studying in a reductionist way an holistic reality, and that's the solution of the paradox, right? So this, I think, is a crucial. And it is very easy to see, and actually there is the proof, but we are going to skip it, that this will imply an identity between, you like this, a affine dimension of the convex sets of states of a composite system in terms of the component, or the dimension of the component systems. Okay, here we have this. The proof is a very simple trivial proof. And this is what corresponds, this identity corresponds to what you have in quantum mechanics from the tensor product, because the dimension, the affine dimension of the convex sets of states in quantum mechanics is the square of the dimension of the Hilbert space minus 1. You put this here and you find the product of the dimension of the Hilbert spaces. So this is exactly the same relation that you have in quantum mechanics due to the tensor product. So the tensor product comes not from this dynamical independence, but from this local observability principle. So we have seen the local observability principle implies the right dimensions of convex sets of states consistent with the quantum tensor problem. Now, what is a faithful state? I say a state is dynamically faithful if I perform a transformation, so it's a bipartite state, first of all, and if I perform a local transformation on one of the two systems, the output, this is the conditional state, not normalized, right? The action of the transformation is the output multiplied by the probability, is in one-to-one correspondence with the transformation. So I have full information from the output state about the transformation. This, and this is true for both systems, clearly. So in equation, this is equal to zero, implies that the transformation is zero, is the trivial zero transformation. This is a crucial calibrability hypothesis, the existence of such a state, because if you have such a state, and if this state is pure, it will reduce the complexity of calibrating a transformation from exponential to zero. Because if you have, suppose you have many identical systems, suppose you have a multipartite transformations on three systems, you have to run a full set of input states for each system, which give an exponential, power 3, power n, if you have, by the way, the full set of states is not just orthogonal set of states. You need also to take linear combination of a basis with plus, minus, plus and minus I polarization identity, right? So now you have just one, this is quantum mechanics, is the entangled state, the pure state is the entangled, maximal entangled, maximal rank, maximal Smith number state. So if you have only classical separable states, for example, you need to run either a mixed state or many possible input and to look for possible output. Now, if you have three systems, you have 2^3, and here, one state, you calibrate the apparatus, right? So this is what I mean by experimental accessibility, reduction of experimental complexity. And I say that the state is also preparationally faithful if each output state can be prepared, joint output state, can be prepared by a suitable local transformation. This is the case, for example, for maximally entangled states, maximally ranked states. And I say that the state is symmetric, it is symmetric, the probability is symmetric by exchanging the two transformations. Now, I imagine that you know where I want to go, no? Because by these states I will build up a GNS representation of transformations for those who are familiar with the GNS construction. Anyway, just to get before going to the C-star algebra, let's look for the possibility of getting easily, but this is too easy way, Hilbert spaces. I define a perfectly discriminable observable and at the same time perfectly discriminable set of states if there exists a set of states such that the observable will give a delta-like probability on this set. And I will call the maximal number of perfectly discriminable states, let me say, informational dimension of the set of states. This will be the dimension of the Hilbert space, huh? Clearly. And then, this is the postulate I want to, I don't like, because it's too quantum. I want to have something more operational. If I assume that I can obtain an informationally a minimal, actually, informationally complete observable from a joint discriminating observable on a system plus another independent system, so ancillary as usual, then this will give me this relation. This is equivalent to say that the affine dimension of the convex sets of space is given, is equal to the informational dimension of the bipartite system of made of the of two identical systems minus one. It's just this is a solution. And now, if you just follow this reason, so the first one is just the state effect duality. The dimension of the complex set of states is the same as the dimension of effects, linear space. The local observability principle, we have seen. This is the last postulate, the information I complete from joint discriminable. And then you put the two together, and you get this equation. You see, now, this equation, you see, on both sides, you have a bipartite system. This is true for all possible bipartite systems. Let me do an extrapolation. It's true for all possible systems. This is an extrapolation. Eh? It was true for all possible bipartite. Now it's true for all possible systems. So this is a point to be fixed. In fact, what I'm going to do, I'm going to avoid this postulate at all. So I don't need to fix this problem. And now, putting these two together, so D4 and the extrapolation together, I get this relation that the informational dimension of the bipartite convex set of state is the square of the informational dimension of the single, which is the textual product rule. Okay, this is just, we don't need it in this moment. It's just the dimension of the transformation is the same as the dimension of the convex sets of bipartite of states of the bipartite system plus one, because the state is preparationally and dynamically faithful. So there is a one-to-one correspondence between states and transformations. Bipartite states and transformations. And finally, but this is the interesting point, putting together the identity D1, which is just state effect duality, and this extrapolation, I get that the dimension of the linear space of generalized effects is the square of an integer, which is just the square of the informational dimension, which is what we have in quantum mechanics, right? And actually, we can do something more, because now we have this faithful state. It's a bilinear form of the transformations. But it's not positive, because it's positive only on positive, on real physical transformation. But if I extend to generalized transformation, it's no longer positive, but it's symmetric. So I can take the modulus, which is the difference between the positive and the negative part, because it's symmetric. So in finite dimension, everything is well defined. In infinite dimension, I don't know if there is a theorem about Banach spaces and symmetric bilinear form over Banach spaces. It may be possible that this can be done also in infinite dimension. Now I define the involution, which is just the projection over positive minus projection over negative, which which changes the sign over negative, the negative eigenvectors, right? And which is an involution. So if I take the square, I get the identity. This will play a crucial role, because this will give the complex conjugation. So be prepared. This is the most interesting part. And now I have a strictly positive scalar product over effects. So effects are a finite dimensional Hilbert space with a scalar product with dimension, is a real Hilbert space, with dimension which is the square of an integer number. So they can be represented as Hermitian matrices over a complex Hilbert space, which is the Hilbert space formulation of quantum mechanics. But this was too easy because I used this fourth postulate that I can achieve an informationally complete measurement by a perfectly discriminating observable, over two identical systems. It's pretty quantum. This is what you have with the Bell measurement. If you perform a Bell measurement over two identical systems, for almost every preparation of one system, you get an informationally complete measurement on the other system. This is typically quantum, too much quantum. So, now, and then everything is the usual thing. We don't need to do more, right? Because I can build up also the Bohr rule, because I can use this will be more beautiful in the C-star probabilistic setting. So let's skip it. So I can build up the Bohr rule. So I can build up the old quantum theory starting from Hilbert space. Okay, let's see the C-star algebra, because I can get the C-star algebra from just two postulates. The crucial point is the notion of adjoint. If I ask you what is the physical meaning of adjoint, I never found the answer to this question. What does it mean that this transformation is the adjoint physically of this other? The faithful state gives away because I can define the transposition in this way. I say that since the state is faithful, which means that there is a one-to-one correspondence between the output and the transformation for both systems, I say that the transpose transformation is the one that performed on the second system will give the same output as the transformation performed on the first. So A transpose on the second will give the same output as A on the first system. And you can easily see that this this is the probability rule for the transpose. And you can see that this satisfies all the axioms of the transposition, which is linear and involutive and reverses the ordering. So from the symmetric dynamically faithful state, I get the notion of transposition. And now the notion of complex conjugation comes from this involution that I need to make the symmetric faithful state positive, to make it positive form. Because since this involution is defined over all possible effects, it is also defined on transformations, because transformations are defined in terms of what they do over all possible effects. If I know what is the if I know what is the output of a transformation over all possible effects, I know the transformation, which means that there is a generalized transformation corresponding to this involution. Let me define this as Z here. So I can extend in this way this involution from effects to transformations by a generalized transformation which is involutive, clearly, and which preserves the ordering. So it's like, the transposition reverses the ordering, but is linear. This one preserves the ordering and will play the role of the complex conjugation. Now, I just need to say that when I make linear combination of, when I make linear combination between effects, I can just say that if I make complex combination, The complex of the real transformation is given by this Z. And then I take the complex conjugate of the linear combination. So, but the crucial point is very easy to define practically complex linear combinations. The problem is how to define the complex conjugate of the transformation. Right? But I have a way here. And in this way, I can introduce the adjoint, which is the composition of the complex conjugation and the transposition. And then, you know, everything is done because I can build up. Because this is now, the complication here is because I want to see things in the usual way, namely with transformation acting on the left as operators over effects. But the point is that now that I have the adjoint, I can build up a GNS representation of transformations over the linear space of effects, which I can make easily complex, right? And the faithful states locally on system one or system two, the way in which you take it, because it's also symmetrical, so it's not a problem, is the state of the GNS construction. So I construct an algebra but on which I can I have a scalar product by which I can define a norm which makes this algebra a sister algebra, because it's the equivalent of an operator algebra. But it's not the operator algebra of quantum mechanics. It's the algebra of generalized complex transformations. Mm-hmm. So it will include quantum mechanics, classical mechanics, and all possibilities between them, right? Mixed quantum and classical. Okay. This is the GNS representation. Now, there is a correspondence between states and effect, because the faithful state will give a correspondence between all possible joint states and transformations. And this will be true also for all possible local states as a special case. So I can put a state here in place of the effect, right? By writing down the corresponding transformation, not with the right normalization. I have to normalize. So everything is defined for finite dimension here, clearly. And that now I have the Born rule in terms of this pairing. The way in which is written the transformation with the dagger is because here I want to see the action of transformation over both states and effects as left multiplication in the usual operator notation. That's all. And so this is the end of the story. So this is everything, because here I have the state with the action of a transformation over the effect, which is everything written in terms of this GNS representation. Now, so we have seen that just the notion of symmetrical, dynamically and preparationally faithful states gives the notion of transposition and that of complex conjugation, which entails the C-star algebra for transformations. And the interesting thing is that if I take this equation, which comes from the fact that the state is preparationally faithful, I already showed this equation to you before, so the dimension of the linear space of generalized transformation, the linear space of transformation is the affine dimension of a bipartite system made of two identical systems plus one, because of the definition of a faithful state. And then I make this GNS construction, which says that the dimension of the transformation must be the square of the dimension of the linear space of the effects, because I am building up the representation of transformation over the linear space of effects, right? Then this implies, this is exactly the same rule as the local observability dimensionality rule for two identical systems. So the only difference is that here we have the same system. Here we have possibly different systems. So my hope is that now I can probably avoid this postulate, the local observability, and just get only the faithful state postulate. Let me just summarize, because I want also to give a list of open problems. Maybe you can help me. So I have this notion of experiment, which entails this notion of state. So the starting point is the most difficult thing. Once you start from this, you get everything. The Bayes rule, this conditioning, maybe within this no signaling from the future, which entails linear evolution as conditioning. So evolution is conditioning. And the special case of deterministic evolution is the unitary or whatever channel case. And then we have informationally equivalence and dynamically equivalence, which entails the notion of effects, and the dual balance pair, I just remind you, is just the probabilistic framework for the experiment, nothing more. The notion of observable and discriminating observable and informationally complete observable. And this gives the block representation, which is nothing more than the probabilistic framework. Finally, I can introduce this dynamical independence, which entails this notion of local state, from which it makes sense to define this symmetric, dynamically faithful state, and preparationally faithful state. So the local observability principle with this and the informationally complete measurement from joint discriminating observable entail dimension of the convex sets which are consistent with the quantum tensor product and the Hilbert space complex, Hilbert space structure. But more easily, from just the symmetric preparation in faithful state, I get, clearly the Born rule, I get the C-star algebra of transformations. And now, I have a few open problems, not many. This one, I would love to expand the existence of this involution to the infinite dimensional case, for Banach space, infinite dimensional Banach space. And then I have this extrapolation, but this is not a problem, because I want to get rid of the postulates by which I prove the existence of Hilbert space. So this is not a problem. And I want to find a simple postulate which discriminates between the quantum and the classical C-star algebra. But I think I have found it. Actually, I have to check things. It's just that the faithful state is pure. Because I'll say this is not the operator algebra. This is what is called also centralizer algebra by some authors like Murphy. It's not a very well-known authors about C-star algebra. It's the algebra of multiplier on the left and on the right. But anyway, when you have a GNS representation, if the state is pure, even though if the representation is irreducible, which would be the case of quantum mechanics. So it seems, but I have to prove it. This is only a conjecture. I don't have the written proof. It's something very this. That really the quantum case with respect to the classical one is this huge reduction of complexity from exponential to just one in calibration of transformation, obviously calibration of effects, so also calibration of measuring apparatus, calibration of your experiment. So This is the hope. This is, I hope that I will be able to prove this before Cambridge meeting, that I have only three postulates: independent systems, symmetrically faithful dynamically and correlationally faithful state, and the quantum case, this state is pure. That's all. Thank you very much.
So we still have some, almost 50 minutes. Yeah, yes.
John?
I'm sort of trying to fit the derivation together in my head. And I think I'm missing some points somewhere. So I'm happy to start with these dual bag spaces and states and effects. I'm happy with the derivation of the tensor product rule from the assumptions there. Then there was the assumption you didn't like. It was too quantum. And that enabled us to draw a conclusion about dimension of these things. So we get the dimension of the space which the effect is given is a square and an integer.
Where we get this, we need this fourth postulate about the existence of the possibility of performing an information complete by a joint.
Yes, the one you didn't like so much.
I don't like it.
That gives us this square thing, and that means that this vector space is isomorphic to a real vector space of the emission operators on the Hilbert space.
Right.
Okay, so now we have that we can write the effects as emission operators.
Right.
Okay, and then.
Generalized effect.
There's this faithful state bit, which maybe I haven't quite got, but I mean, suppose that now we can write a probability as the trace of B rho, where E is the Hermitian operator for the effect, rho is the Hermitian operator for the state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's fine. And now, suppose we already knew now that the set of effects is actually the positive operators, not just emission, but positive.
No, but this is where the generalized effect, the difference.
Yes, so our problem now is we've got the generalized effects as emission operators. We want to say that the actual effects, the ones which aren't generalized, are the positive ones.
Right.
Then you can use, Paul Bush's
right, exactly. I didn't mention this.
To the positive cone of operators, couldn't it be a different cone?
This is not a problem because, I understand your point is that once you have all possible generalized effects, there are infinitely many ways of choosing the positive cones of the true one, right? Of the true effect. Okay, operationally this is not a problem because I start from the real one, I know which one are the real one, I know they make a cone, and then I build up the differences. So I already have the cone. But anyway, there are infinitely many cones which correspond to infinitely many representations. But if you just change the basis, you change the cone. But this is not a problem anyway, because I start from the real effects and I build up a linear space, but I know which one are the cone, because I start from operational effects. So I don't have this problem. And then, as you say, the states will be through the Bush theorem, since I start with effects, that will be the positive.
But why can't I make a non-equivalent theory just by, I can construct any old convex cone in this real vector space, which is not, doesn't look anything like a cone of positive operators.
Yeah.
Right. States on it.
No, but wait a minute, you have to consider the old construction. So I start from real effects, right? Then I just compare dimensions, and I see the dimension of the linear combination of effects are the right one to represent them in terms of emission operators. I can have infinitely many representations in terms of emission operators, I agree, right? But I know which effects are the real one and which are the generalized one, because I built myself. So I will take the positive one corresponding to the real effects. Is it your question?
I'm not sure, but I'll think about it and maybe look at it while you're looking at the paper.
This is silly. Thank you, Interesco. You derived from natural postulate to complex geometric space structure.
in the first stage. And the second stage, you derive GNSS construction. I have a question only on the first stage. I think there is a possibility to derive the structure of Jordan algebra. Jordan algebra is greater than a larger class of, which possibly deny such a possibility. Please explain.
No, I strongly don't believe. I think Jordan algebra was the death of this axiomatization. This is a personal opinion. I'm expressing a personal opinion. The Jordan algebra has no operational correspondence, so it is completely out of my research line. It's not the algebra. The composition has no physical meaning.
For example, there is I cannot understand which postulate denies such a possibility.
For example,
real symmetric
matrix. You cannot discuss about a topic which is completely unrelated to my talk. I start from practical operational definition.
Yes.
So in order to get a Jordan algebra, I need a practical definition of the composition of the Jordan algebra. You should give it to me. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't have any other answer because it's out of
there.
You understand me?
So on one of your previous slides at the very end, you said that the thing that distinguishes the classical from the quantum, you believe, is the purity of...
Yes, I strongly believe that, but I have not proved it. I should confess that I am dwelling on this thing, but I want to prove it.
But then you also said something which implicitly you suggested was equivalent to this notion of the symmetric faithful state is pure.
No. Okay, you're right. I said from the beginning that if the state where pure would be a huge reduction of complexity. But I really not proved that.
There's something I'm missing. So that you can get this reduction in complexity by saying rather than preparing all the local states,
right?
I just prepare the one state. So what confuses me is in a classical theory, if I prepare the perfectly correlated state between two systems, you would say that's not a symmetric faithful state? I mean, I do...
No, okay. To me, a mixed state corresponds to a complex preparation, not any, a simple one. So, for example, you have to prepare concretely, for example, a classical faithful state. How can you get a classical faithful state? You can get a classical mixture of up, up, down, down, and then left, left, right, right, and with the I and with the minus I. Now, how can you do it practically? You just change the input all the time, and you say to the other system, this is the state. So that's equivalent to run 8 possible inputs, right? Or 16, how many? 16. Possible inputs. Because there are also the diagonal ones. So this is the mixed state. It's complex.
But you only have to do it, or you don't have to do it 8 times, right?
No. I have to do it, I have to randomly prepare these possible states. But do you have a way to make a single preparation for every mixture you want?
I don't see that there's really a distinction here, because I can say I put the whole thing with the random number generator that chooses what measurement you do in a box and say that's
right.
A single preparation. Or you have another box which is prepared as pure state.
No.
Both cases you'll have to prepare them many times to get statistics.
But you're right, but think to the actual situation. In quantum optics, you are able to very easily prepare a twin beam by down conversion, but nobody is able to prepare number states. So the experimental complexity is not the number of preparation. In the sense that you re-prepare the same state all the time, you re-prepare the same state 8 times is easier than to prepare different states. The complexity is not the number of times you have to run the experiment, it's the number of different preparations.
So
You're saying it's easier to prepare a pure state than a maximally or a highly mixed state.
The problem is that to prepare a mixed state, which is not any mixed state, but is the mixed state that you want, you don't have a simple rule. The only rule that you have is to prepare the pure states that compose this mixed state and randomly choose them. This is the only way that you have, in practice, right? In quantum optics, for example, one state, the twin beam, very easy. Everybody can do it. Demartini, Zeilinger. Number states, nobody's able to do it. And you don't just need to prepare one number state. You need to prepare many of them, many linear combinations of them.
What about purification? Yeah. If you add an ancilla and you purify it, assuming a mixed state is arising from some pure state of a more bigger system.
Yeah, but that means that, but this means that you are able to prepare a single pure state. Right? But you need to prepare the purification actually in the lab. And it's a simplification. You have just one state instead of many. It is really the practical complexity. If you ask people that are doing tomography of gates, they say it's a big mess to make tomography if you have many, if you have a multiple input gate, because they have to change all possible inputs.
Well, quantum optics is probably the one exception. I mean, all other systems is much easier to prepare on an entangled state than an entangled state.
You think so?
Well, yeah. I mean,
so you are, but wait a minute. What you are saying has huge consequences for the founding of quantum computer. You are saying that it would be experimentally, exponentially complex to produce a single entangled state. You are saying that. Which means that the way in which they do quantum computation by entangled states, you are saying that.
Practically, I'm saying that indeed in optics, you know, it's hard to prepare a single photon. But in other cases, I mean, Josephson junctions or whatever, it's really hard to prepare an entanglement, but to prepare a single qubit is easy.
Right. But then you have to prepare.
Okay,
suppose,
yeah. Yeah.
No, the problem is that if you have many systems, the number of input states you have to randomly choose.
Yeah.
Because you have to randomly choose, so you have to be able, in principle, to prepare all of them. And then you don't do it, actually. But you have to be able to prepare all of them. It's exponentially large.
Yes, but you need an exponential number.
Okay, so you need one. You need a lot of big splitters, each one for every, and then you have to prepare all possible combination of these splitters. You have to do it. This is an exponential complexity in practice because you need to.
But you need to do an exponential number of measurements anyway, yeah. Distinguished measurements. So it's just, you know, the square of the complexity.
Yeah.
I think this might be a good point to have our coffee break. We have 3 minutes. Thank you very much. Thank you.